It is Thursday, May 22nd. We're back. It's Deferred Collusion, and there he is. There's a Shohei Ohtani's eyeliner company. What is it that they're promoting when they do the home run celebration, bro?
Something lipsomatic. I don't know Jess, but it's great to be back. I do know that it is a luscious facial moisturizer that costs somewhere in the neighborhood of $200.
Yeah,
I got it to try it, but I am looking okay, I think.
I gotta say something about that, dude, because for the longest time, I was like, I put nothing on my skin, bro. Like, just didn't treat my skin well at all. And Michaela, my wife, has really encouraged me to start taking serious care of myself. So I have a whole American Psycho Patrick Bateman routine when I go to bed now. Like, I put the hyaluronic acid on. I put the toner on. I put the oil on. All that stuff, and it just feels wonderful. So I get it. You know,
love that. Yeah, I put sunscreen on when I'm outside.
You have to. Important, dude. I went golfing yesterday and I put sunscreen on. Every time I come back with a little base burn, my wife she gets pretty pissed off at me. We're back. Dodgers are back on track. It's me, Jesse King of Crespi, with the Lord Paramount of Torrance, Brandon Bollinger. Deferred Collusion. As always, remember to like, comment, and subscribe. Share it with your friends, especially to your Dodger fan friends, even your Padre fan friends. You know, we can get in on the fun with them too. But Brandon,
sure, anybody that likes baseball, dude, we're all lovers of baseball. Jesse, you were talking about, you know, when your skin gets to burning. Well, baseball is burning, and damn it, I thought the whole ship was burning. The Dodgers, in the depths of despair, get swept by the Angels last weekend, get just beat up by the Diamondbacks in game one, lost four straight. I was ready to come on here and talk about just, is this it? Have the injuries finally caught up? They're cutting our pets' heads off. I mean,
well,
Chris Taylor, Austin Barnes, you know, I'm still not over it, but I guess, you know, all I can do is just smile and be grateful that it happened. And, you know, I do want to just say thank you, Chris Taylor.
Yeah.
Some incredible moments, some incredible hits. I'm still just like watching that home run from the 2017 World Series just fly off of, I think it was Dallas Keuchel. I think you ripped him.
It was first pitch of game one, by the way. But another thing that we should do, he was the co-MVP of the 2017 NLCS against the Chicago Cubs, where Chris Taylor hit .316 with two home runs, five runs scored, three RBIs, and four walks in a five-game gentleman sweep over the Chicago Cubs in 2017. Justin Turner was the co-MVP, but Chris Taylor was a playoff
guys.
For the years that Taylor was good, he was a playoff performer. He also had one of the greatest, most clutch catches you'll ever see in the NLCS game seven. In Milwaukee, just one of my favorite defensive plays by a Dodger ever. Like, just hands down. Dude. And also, of course, the walk-off home run against the Cardinals in the 2021.
I was there.
Wild card
game. There.
So
I was there.
Wild card game that shouldn't have happened, by the way.
Should not have happened. It was insane.
Yeah.
Jesse, I've been actually at two Dodger games that were absolutely insane. Both of them were actually with my dad. So, hey, shouts out. Big
shout
Mike.
Out to Bollinger.
That walk-off in 21, and I believe it was 09 when James Loney hit that little pop up to left field that was dropped.
So Matt Holliday dropped it.
Holliday dropped it.
I believe that was actually hit. It was either Jamie Carroll or it was the other guy like Jamie Carroll that was on the Dodgers, not Mark Grigelonic. It was. Oh my God, I'm blanking on who it was. But yeah, it was not DeRosa. Who hit that ball? Jesus, I gotta look this up now. Hold on,
dude. I can't believe I don't remember.
Dropped ball, Matt Holliday. We gotta look this up. Cardinals, Dodgers. Holliday puts Loney on second. Oh, so wait, it was Loney. Oh, so it was Loney. Right.
I told you. Don't make me misremember.
Sorry. No. It was Loney. Loney who hit it, and then it was, I think, Jamie Carroll who got the game-winning hit in that game. I think that's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
It was either Jamie Carroll or the guy I'm thinking of. But either way.
But I have this distinct memory. We were sitting on like the first base side. So behind third base side.
I got to look this up. I'm sorry. Go
ahead. Look it up, dude. But we were sitting on the third base side behind Dodgers dugout. And there was a Cardinals fan sitting behind me.
Hey, Mark Loretta. Mark Loretta.
Mark Loretta.
I said Mark Grejelanek. I meant Mark.
Dude, Loretta. Mark Grejelanek is a Dodgers legend. I just remember him from the All-Star Baseball 99 on the N64 and just like the walk-up like announcer just being like, Mark Grejelanek.
Yeah.
Oh man, I love
him, Scott Podsednik, and then Chuck Knobloch. Chuck Knobloch, Mark Grejelanek, Scott Podsednik. They always had like the they're not baseball names, you know what I mean? But
they sound like hockey players, right?
Yeah. Total tongue twisters. But either way, Chris Taylor will always go down as one of, you know, just one of my favorite Dodgers because he was a diamond in the rough that Andrew Friedman identified, made a trade to Seattle to get him. And then he had, I think, a season where he had like 6 grand slams or something crazy like
that.
And playoff performer. And, you know, obviously he became a point of conversation for Dodger fans over the past couple of years because his performance really started to dwindle. He was one of the guys that was a swing king guy. Robert Van Skoyak really brought him along to fix his launch angle. And he went from being a guy that was just kind of dispatched by the Mariners to a real key contributor for the Dodgers. Got 2 big contracts by the Dodgers in his time with the team. And,
kind of guy.
Yeah, he got DFA'd, but I think that most people would agree that he was a great Dodger, and we wish him all the best. And we're going to talk about him a little bit later on in the notes.
Yeah,
there are some teams going after him that might be going after him. But
and Jesse, just the last thing I want to say before we move on into more current events, but I just think that the indelible legacy that is Chris Taylor is that he is the prototype, right? That the Dodgers are looking for and developing in their system.
That's
hyper versatility, high bat to ball, you know, ability, and just, you know, that was before all the strikeouts, but he was a 3 true outcome guy that had pop, could steal you some bags, and could play a plus defensive position from center field
anywhere,
to shortstop, second base, whatever. I mean, it was nuts. It's nuts how athletic he is.
I would argue he was kind of like the first guy. Like, he was like the embodiment of that for the Dodgers. Like, he was like when people would put together like those lineup cards for the Dodgers back in like 2018, 19 about why they were so deep and versatile, it was always because Chris Taylor could play any position.
Yeah.
But he was also a very productive, like 750 to 850 OPS guy that was just really, that's just really valuable to have for a guy that's like, he could either lead off, hit second for you, or he could bat like eighth or ninth. And
yeah, man, if those 2010 Dodgers, if Kershaw was the heart and Justin Turner was the soul, then Chris Taylor was the body, right?
You know,
he was the one that kind of filled all the gaps while your Seegers were dealing with injuries, your, you know, Puig was being inconsistent, or Agon was hurt, whatever you needed. We love you, CT3. We hope you find some more baseball before you hang up those spikes.
But he basically made room, of course, for Haesung Kim, who was getting playing time anyway, but also Dalton Rushing, who got the call up, and with Austin Barnes going down. So the youth movement is kind of somewhat on here for Dodgers. And you know, Rushing and Kim have just sort of filled in. I mean, I'm so impressed with Dalton Rushing and what he's done. He's hitting .308 in his short tenure. He's a couple RBIs. Haesung Kim is hitting .378 in his short tenure. So these guys are stepping right in and picking up right where the Dodgers needed them to be.
And an important part about that, too, is I believe that Kim and Taylor have now had the same amount of at-bats in the season for the Dodgers. And to your point, Kim hitting around that .300 clip where Taylor was around .1. I forget what the number was. I don't have it.
And that was partially why the Dodgers DFA'd him, because it did seem like Taylor, I think he was kind of asking out. He wanted
an opportunity.
He wanted opportunity to play every day, and I think at a certain point you have to afford him that.
And I can remember hearing guys like Jock and Seager and Bellinger talk about CT3 and just like, we know we're a great team. We got CT3 coming off the bench. He's the best athlete on the field. So it's like, you know, the guy's injured, but when he's healthy, he's like a damn near five-tool player. And, you know, hopefully we can get a, we can get him to be some semblance of that somewhere in the MLB. I'd love to see him play some meaningful baseball still.
Yeah, well, the to sort of go into that direction of like how the on-field has been going, you know, we were, I think we were kind of getting a little worried for the Dodgers because they had a little, they got swept by the Angels. We didn't record last weekend. It was a bad series, just no, total no show by the Dodgers in that series.
Brutal.
And then they go into the Arizona series and they lose 9-5, and you're starting to feel like, oh God, like the wheels are falling off with the pitching injuries. Obviously Sasaki just went down, so now they're mixing and matching. Kershaw comes up, doesn't look great in his first outing, but things turned around on the back of Yoshinobu Yamamoto in Game Two of the Diamondback series, and we, you and I have talked about it all year ad nauseum, just about how important this guy is to this team at this point. Seven shutout innings, had a no hitter through six, only gave up one hit, couple of walks, I think. And struck out eight or nine, I forget, but just no run support for Yama. Dodgers blow it on, was it with two outs when Gabriel Moreno hit the solo home run in the ninth inning off of Tanner Scott?
Was it two I think there was one out. I think there was one out, but I text you right as it happened. It just, oh, it felt bad, and I got to give Tanner Scott an apology. I was pretty upset. I was cursing. I'm trying not to curse, trying to be a better man for my daughter.
I believe you said he sucks, if I want to reveal our
knock it off, dude. Yeah, come on, don't bury me. This guy's shooting on me, dude.
Yeah. Well, he came out, and then he gave a two-run homer to Corbin Carroll in extra innings.
And Jesse, I got to tell you, that's what this was leading into. I was very upset. But I felt that home run before Carroll hit it. I was like, oh, I don't like this. He took an outside like slider, and it just looked like Carroll was on it. He saw it really well. And Scott came back with something just left over the middle of the plate.
Fastball away. Yeah, fastball left side of the plate. And Carroll opposite field power, too. Like, it was like a no-doubt upper shot. It was pretty impressive. Corbin Carroll.
Because I think he was sitting on that breaking ball down that outside, but he was looking in that quadrant, whatever you want to call it. And, my God, he didn't miss. Corbin Carroll is one of my favorite players to watch.
He's awesome. He's so good. Yeah.
It's crazy that the NL West just has three of the most insane right fielders in baseball with Corbin Carroll, obviously Fernando Tatis Jr., but my man Teoscar Hernandez, my segue into him returning from the injured list, much needed reinforcements, him and the Tank himself, Tommy Tanks.
Well,
both guys
point,
had meaningful plays in the series. Go ahead.
Before you get to Teoscar, in the 10th, you know, I was thinking like, oh shit, the Dodgers just lost the series to the Diamondbacks here. Like something is wrong. A very, very important series of at-bats. Tommy Edman got a double in that extra innings, which kind of initiated the rally for the Dodgers to get back. Just awesome at-bats. And then Muncy, who struggled this year, a very important sac fly, got the win. That was a win where it was like, exhale, thank God we won that game, because I would have started, not panicking, but I would have started like making videos, like criticizing the team a little bit and decisions that are being made.
Yeah.
But I feel like it was just like kind of an important win for the team to kind of get it off their chest, because they're just clearly not all there right now. And part of that is injuries. And then, I mean, the next game, like you mentioned about Teoscar, they were getting shut down by Corbin Burnes up until the seventh inning, just completely shut down.
Jess, Corbin Burnes was cooking.
Yeah.
You know, there was some grumblings about his performance early off. I think his first couple starts were whatever.
And he's been great since,
He's a dog, dude. I mean, some of that swing and miss yesterday was just tough. And it felt like, you know, again, we've been kind of slowing down offensively. It seems like Otani's had some bad breaks. Seems like he's grounding out a lot to second. I mean, same with Conforto, but we can talk about that a little later. So, you know, Mookie had a couple of big home runs in this series, hopefully waking up, starting to feel better, you know, back, getting back from that illness that really got him off to a uneasy start. You know, some highs, but some lows. But all in all, looking good on defense. And Freddie is still continuing his case for MVP this
Freddie
year.
Freddie is on another planet right now. I mean, I don't think that there's an argument right now that he's not the best first baseman in the National League. Like, I mean, he's just...
Jesse,
I mean,
we're almost through May. And, yeah. Like, I mean, I'm hearing more about Tatis as the front runner for the NL MVP. And I'm like, dude, my boy Frederick is just on an absolute tear right now. He's seeing the ball. He's playing great first base. I know it's not a really defensively weighted position, but yeah, it's still such a meaningful spot when you got a guy that can pick it. That's just been there for years. Again, you know, I'm kind of singing our boys' praises. I can't really dump on them too hard, but it was, I wasn't sure what we were going to get out of them against the Diamondbacks, especially after they dog walked Yama back in Phoenix. That grand slam, just all that, you know, really the first time we saw Yama get touched up this season.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was a really, really important season, or excuse me, series win.
And to your point about just part of this team, it just shows how important Teoscar Hernandez is to this team to come in and get that 3-run home run off of Corbin Burns. That was the only offense the Dodgers had in game 3 of the series to win the series. Winning the final game 3-1, but super important part of that team, which is kind of why I would encourage Dodger fans who have been kind of maybe hitting the panic button a little bit to just calm down. Like, it's going to be okay. We're 2 games up in the division. They are
biggest lead of the year, baby.
Yeah, the Dodgers' biggest lead of the year. Rick, I do want to get back to Yamamoto really quick because he was so good. But there is like a concerning trend in his starts, and I saw a video from somebody, I forget who it is, who was pretty good. I sent it to you. I forget who. Big League Analysis made a video talking about how Yoshinobu Yamamoto has 14 runs of support in his starts this season, like while he's on the mound. While he's on the mound, 14 runs of support. That's 2.17 runs per 9 innings pitched by Yamamoto this year.
Wow.
And he obviously had 1 run of support in game 2, which ultimately the Dodgers did win the game, but he got a no decision. But, you know, just the same way Yamamoto is like super crucially important to this Dodgers pitching staff right now, I think like Teoscar is kind of like the heart and soul. Like, I don't know how to describe it. Like, Freddie is the machine of the offense, whereas like Teoscar like gives the offense the identity that it needs to really get going. So I do expect that this Dodger team is gonna go on a run soon. They just need to get Snell or Glasnow back. One of those two guys has to come back sometime.
Absolutely. Next month. It's really so important, man. So important. You can just see the stress on the bullpen. You know, like we talked about, Sasaki went down, so adding further stress. There's no real timetable for him to come back. He hasn't started throwing. but I mean, Kirby Yates just went down with an injury. We've kind of seen him overused. Vessia has been struggling. Bonda's been, you know, he's been having a tough go.
Yeah.
Evan Phillips came back, looked good, got injured real quick. And then they've thrown out just some other guys that aren't really working, you know.
Right. Jack Dreyer has been getting some some run. Ben Kasperius, by the way. I'm changing his nickname to Big Dick Ben because, dude, comes in. Vessia came in and got runners at first and third, nobody out, I believe, and then got a pop out and a strikeout to sort of to get out of it. I think he loaded the bases with an intentional walk, and then they went to Ben Kasperius, and he pitched out of it, got a he struck somebody out. I forget who it was. But just an awesome like clutch, don't give up any runs moment by the pitching staff. Or they could have lost in 9 innings in that game if not for them pulling it off. So I love Ben Kasperius. I think he's been like the unsung hero of the Dodgers pen this year. But you know, people trashing Tanner Scott, he's got a 2.31 ERA and a .85 WHIP in 23 innings this year. So he's like, he's actually been really good.
Yeah, he's been great. There was a couple, I think.
He just had some blown saves. So that's why it looks.
And I think there was like a couple early on, but I think he had like something, I think it was like 17 consecutive appearances without like allowing a run. So he's been great. You know, Dodgers are 19-9 at home right now. So that's great. We're still holding court. But it's been a rough month, right? They're 6-5 this month. So recency bias, it feels tough, but our stats are still good.
I think they're like 9-8 or something. Sorry, I gotta look this up. Whatever.
I was just talking about at home.
Sorry, gotcha. Yeah. No, I mean they're like, I think that we saw stretches like this last year too. Particularly when Glasnow was struggling a little bit. But I know that I just remember we made an episode when we first started this podcast. I think it was like probably like our second or third month of doing this. And it was midsummer and the Dodgers were just kind of,
everybody was hurt. Mookie broke his hand.
Yeah.
It was miserable, dude.
Yeah. And then they just ended up, you know, winning the division like they always do. And then winning the World Series. So, you know, we can,
but just cool. Sorry to interrupt you. Just speaking about the division, I mean, look, the Dodgers spent all this money and were favorites to be world beaters in this insane pitching staff. Well, it's a pitching staff that's got 14 guys on the injured list currently and just cut their two longest tenured position players in Chris Taylor and Austin Barnes because they needed to bring up a young Dalton Rushing and a Kim Hae-sung. Because it's a tight division and it's going to be a tight race all season. The Padres are great, even though they've just lost six straight. So maybe great's a stretch, but they are a very good team, a very dangerous team. And those Giants, man, they just, the never say Giants, dude. They just keep swinging and are currently two games out of first place.
They are, but, you know, the Padres have actually had a little bit of a fall down here because they've lost.
Don't fall from grace because they started super hot, if you recall, Jess.
Yeah, well, they have the best pitching in the division right now. Like they have given up the fewest runs, but their offense is lacking. They're lacking pop. Manny Machado only has 3 home runs right now. They're lacking pop at first base and in left field. And that's why there's talk about potentially them making a trade for a left fielder. And there's also
that's crazy. That's crazy. I'm sorry to interrupt you. I didn't know Machado only had 3 home runs. I mean, Michael Conforto has 3 home runs, I think.
Yeah.
Maybe he only has 2.
I think his average is decent, but he's just not many right now. And it's
my bad, dude. Conforto's got 2 home runs. No disrespect to Manny Machado.
Oh, yeah.
But Jesse, real quick, did you know that fucking Michael Conforto still has a Giants jersey on his Instagram profile picture?
You sent that to me. Does he have any posts since and recently? I gotta look at this because
there's only like three or four posts. And they're like a couple of them are just like thank you fan posts. Like one's of the Giants. I think one's for who do you play with? The Mets? I forget.
He played with. Well, he started with the Mets, and he was on the Giants last year, I think, right?
Yeah. Dude, his Instagram profile picture. It's him in a Giants jersey. No wonder he's not hitting as a Dodger, dude. The baseball gods are upset. It's disrespectful.
He hasn't posted anything on his Instagram since May 9th, 2018. And it was when he was on the Mets. But he still changed. But he still changed his profile picture to the Giants at some point because that was after the Mets. So, yeah, I mean, you're a professional ball player. Like, I kind of feel like somebody in his life isn't doing him any favors. Cause I'm guessing doesn't go on Instagram. That's my guess. This dude just doesn't check social media at all.
He doesn't even know that he's been cursed. Somebody put a curse on him and he's now cursed and he's fucking batting 162.
Wait, he has a curse on him? What's the curse from?
That he's wearing a Giants jersey.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But he's a Dodger. You think Tommy Lasorda's up in big blue heaven fired up? What is this?
Yeah. No, I mean, Tommy would have laid into him. It's malpractice as a Dodger.
Jess, you would have understood that pretty nifty little little reference there. If you weren't just stoned on pot, you hire Pather, dude.
Yeah, it's true. Or I would just, by the way, it's a great, if you're in Sherman Oaks, you need to go to a cool dispensary, hire Path. They are awesome. But it's also just my true ADD. Just straight up ADD. Like I don't hear half the things you say, Brandon. I just go along with it. So, you know, that's why this is the best podcast in baseball.
Just me talking to myself.
Yep. So apparently the Padres, because they are in on, they need to make a trade for some pop. Luis Robert, I do think, is a possibility for the Padres. I could see that, but
he's had some weird comments too, and he's not performing well either.
No, he's not. But that's why I think it could happen, because he'd be a little bit cheaper than he normally would have. He might be like a little lower end prospect haul.
Yeah, but I also think Jerry Reinsdorf is delusional, so he might still want something. Maybe. But he'll probably want garbage. Like, dude, he doesn't.
Maybe, but apparently there's a chance. There's some speculation out there that Chris Taylor could go to the Padres because, you know, he obviously is looking for playing time on a team. And that's, you know, Mr. Versatility right there going to the Padres. Let me just tell you, if Chris Taylor went to San Diego and played left field and was an impact bat, like turned his career around there and I don't know how I'd feel about that. I'd be happy for him, but that would be hard to stomach. Just
I wouldn't be fired up about it. But I bittersweet, dude. It's just like seeing your ex with, I don't know.
Yeah, no, it is.
Little brother, I guess.
There was a fake news report going around that Machado and Tatis were beefing, which was believable. You got fake news a little bit there, brother. You sent it to me. But I saw it because I guess, you know, it's
got to set it through the proper channels, dude. I had to verify.
But a lot of credible, quote unquote, credible people started like walking with it. I still think there might be like something there because I don't think that Machado and Tatis like each other all that much, if I'm being honest.
Really?
Yeah, I've just never gotten like the vibes that they do. I'm sure they are professionals and they want to win together, but I don't know. Something's just wrong with that team.
Sometimes two outdoor cats just can't be in the same room.
Speaking of outdoor cats, dude, I'm going out of town for the weekend, and I had
where
to
are you
take
going?
I'm going to Cambria for the Memorial Day weekend.
Whoa, you gonna listen to Coheed?
Yeah, dude, hell yeah, that's actually a pretty good band. Were you big on Coheed?
I liked a few few of the first couple records. I haven't listened in a while, but I definitely appreciate Claudio and I think he's turned into like a graphic novelist and
right.
I don't know. I think Coheed has really evolved. I think they're like almost like a modern Rush now. They've got lore and shit. So that's all cool.
I saw them. I think they were like playing with Cursive or something at the Palladium once, like when I was like 17 or something. I forget. Sick. But what was I talking about? Oh yeah, so we're going to Cambridge, and I had to take my cat to the vet today because he got into a fight outside with another cat. This is a pretty dumb story, but we noticed that he had this little like burst abscess on his head.
Whoa!
Yeah, and it was like it smelled horrible, like pus. I think got like infected, got into a fight with something outside. So I had to take him into the vet today. And if you can't hear right now, if you hear meowing. He's outside of my door being really obnoxious. So,
man, we'll heal up soon, Mr. Cat, Mr. Yeah. Cat Row.
All right. So,
the Padres stink is what you said. They've stunk.
Yeah, they do.
They've lost six straight.
Are you
walked by the freaking Blue Jays, dude? They got swept by the Blue Jays
and the Mariners, which is understandable because the Mariners are actually pretty good. Hold on. I'm going to let my cat.
Vetter Cup, dude. The Vetter Cup. That's a funny name for a rivalry, he said to himself as his co-host ran across. Hey, he's back.
Let me ask you, do you think the Giants are better than the Padres at this point, or do you think that that's going to change? Like, will the Padres overtake them? Because the Diamondbacks, I think, are good, but this year's version of the Diamondbacks seems like they're kind of – there's just something missing from that team where they're blowing a lot of games. Like the Diamondbacks are clearly blowing a lot of games. Mm-hmm. So I think I've dropped them down in my tier for the time being. Padres I still have up there, but I'm starting to wonder if there's smoke, if there's fire there where there's smoke with the Giants maybe potentially being better than the Padres.
I think that the Giants bullpen is way better than I expected it to be. They're winning what feels like a lot of close games, like every day, which is just weird. And I don't know if you feel this, but it kind of feels reminiscent to that 2021 magic that Giants team had. So I don't know if it's just the power of friendship or Buster Posey's like black magic over there, but I think the Giants are for real. Like I said, until proven otherwise, I'm kind of buying the hated ones are back, but
well,
you gotta fucking take the king down, baby. Come on now.
You know what's crazy?
What are you doing?
What's crazy about what this team? This is the most Giants thing ever. What I'm about to say. So Helio Ramos has become like a real star, like a real, real good player for them. Mm-hmm. He's hitting 296. He's got like 9 homers. Kid's really, really good. He's a stud. They have grandson of the wind, Jung Hoo Lee, who's having a pretty damn good season.
Pretty cool.
Wilmer Flores, dude, this guy, like, I feel like he's been in the league for 20 years. And he has 10 home runs and 42 RBIs in 49 games.
Wow.
I mean, this guy is putting up, he's going to hit 30 homers with like 100. He's on pace for 30 home runs and 120 RBIs.
That's
unbelievable. I feel like this guy just like won't go away. It's the most Giants thing I've ever heard, that this guy's having like an all-star season on this team. And maybe is it the Buster Posey effect? Is it just rubbing off on him? Like,
you just won't die, dude. The Giants just won't die. Like, I thought we killed you. I thought we didn't have to worry about you anymore, but here you are just lingering. Just die. Jess, I think this is as good a time as any just to give a little state of the league real quick. And
yeah, sure.
Hit our listeners with a little current standings. I'm going to start, since we're in the NL West. The Dodgers are sitting at 31-19. The Giants are at 29-21. That's 2 games back. The Padres, 27-21. Followed by the Diamondbacks, 26-24. And the God darn Rockies, 8-42. Jesse, that has officially secured the worst start in the modern era of baseball after 50 games, 8-42. Jess.
That's pretty good.
Ew. Dude, so the NL West, only division in baseball to have 4 teams with a positive run differential. And then you got the Rockies, who are on pace to win 26 games.
Yeah.
26 games, dude. That's the same amount of games that they won in the shortened 2020 COVID season, bro. This is disgusting. Something's got to change in Colorado. Before I move on, quick, give me one thing to change in Colorado. What do you got to do?
Well, you and I will always say change ownership.
Hey! You
can get an owner in there that's going to actually overpay for some... But do what Toronto does, man. Like, Toronto is finding ways to get people to sign with them, you know, and I think that Colorado might have to do something similar and overpay to get some pitching, because no free agent pitcher ever wants to sign there. You know, it's just where careers go to die. But I think if you offer them enough money, they'll consider it. If you overpay,
you gotta get Coors involved, dude. Get some of that beer money involved.
There
get
you go.
Some upgrade your facilities, your player development, and then have a solid core to build around, which they kind of do. They've got some talent.
Yeah.
Man, and was it Tovar? And I know I'm forgetting some guys. Senzatella, I think, but...
They signed Tovar to a big deal, but there's no rhyme or reason to really what they're doing, because remember, they traded Nolan Arenado because after giving him a big contract, they paid the Cardinals to do it, and then they go... and sign overpay for Chris Bryant, who's like who admits that he probably shouldn't have signed there. Literally has openly admitted that he probably shouldn't have signed there. Basically admits he was kind of like bamboozled maybe by ownership into believing that they were actually going to be competitive. And they've kind of done nothing since. And it's just, there's no rhyme or reason. It just seems like There is no direction for that franchise, and I wouldn't be surprised if they are bad, bad, bad for like the next 4 or 5 years until they kind of have like a whole like structural, like I don't know, like some sort of audit. They need to be audited. You know what I mean? Like of their front office and just the way that they do things, because it's not working there, and they have to figure out. They've been trying the dehumidifier thing. I'm sorry, what's it called?
The humidifier.
Yeah,
the
right. Yeah.
And stuff
so,
like that.
But like, that's clearly not the problem, because the Rockies have been good before. Like, there's just something wrong. Like, they're not even hitting. That's the problem. They have the second worst offense in the National League, and they play at Coors Field.
Yeah, I think they got Kyle Farmer like batting cleanup for them or something. No disrespect to Kyle Farmer, but I mean, like, come on.
Imagine if they played at a normal stadium. I mean, they would have worse offensive numbers than they already have, which just goes to show how bad they are. But
how bad they are, dude, sorry, I want to pivot on that one. I don't think the Rockies deserve us talking about them this long.
No, we can move on.
But the Pirates out in the National League Central are at 17-33 as Paul Skene trade rumors start to swirl. Not a good side for that franchise. Had a kid fall from the bleachers. His buddy's getting arrested for serving alcohol. We've seen videos of staff fighting fans. They took down the Roberto Clemente sign. Just all kinds of miscues for the Pirates this year. So they're in free fall. Let's keep an eye on if they will trade Paul Skene.
Well,
and then who's getting Tommy John? Their pitcher,
Jerry Jones.
God, I was going to say Jerry Jeffries. Sorry.
So John Heyman did put out a tweet or excuse me, I've been dealing with a cough for like 2 weeks. My apologies.
Well, shut up. No.
That the Pirates, John Heyman says the Pirates will not trade Paul Skene, despite what they're saying. But I am going to predict, as I did on a previous episode, that when we get to the point of pre-arbitration, when he becomes arbitration eligible around the 3-year mark, that's when you're going to start seeing the Paul Skene trade rumors really heat up. You might even see him in the offseason this year. I don't think he'll be traded this year, but I do think, and mark my words, the Dodgers will be in on Paul Skene, and I would not be surprised if the Dodgers landed him.
I like that.
Don't forget I said it.
Coming up in fourth in the National League Central on that, sitting at 24-26, your Milwaukee Brewers. I didn't think they'd be off to this tough of a start. They're 6 games back.
Our pick to win the division, by the way.
The Reds 25-26. The Cardinals, surprise of the season. I think the most surprising team all year, in a positive way anyway. But 27-23, they are 3 games back out of the first place Cubs, who are 30-20. They really kicked our ass this year so far, Jess, huh? They seem legit. Pete Crow Armstrong's a stud. Kyle Tucker's great. I don't even know. Let's see. Where was I? Oh, I don't know. The Cubs seem legit. They have a really even split on the year too. 15-10 at home and away.
Yeah.
So
their offense has been really, really good.
They just seem balanced, right?
And their offense has been really good. I mean, that Kyle Tucker trade could not have worked out any better so far. That guy is unbelievable. He is earning himself. He's earning himself at the very least a 5 at the beginning of his contract.
If Vladimir Guerrero got what he got, I mean, Tucker is going to get something close to that. And the Dodgers allegedly are in on Tucker, so we'll see.
Yeah, listen to these numbers from Tucker really quick, because he's only hitting .278, but he does have a .939 OPS. 12 homers, 35 RBIs, 38 runs scored, .387 on base, .552 slug. 14 stolen bases. This dude is just an all-around great player. And
stud.
I think arguably the most underappreciated superstar in all of baseball.
Maybe. Dude. He's, I mean, as PCA is kind of like stealing some of that spotlight, I really think, you might be right. He might be the most underappreciated. Switching over to the NL East, the Marlins are at 19-29, Nationals 22-27. Braves are sitting at .500 after going 0-7 to start the year. They're 7 games back of the first place Phils. Mets are at 30-20, sitting 2 games back of the aforementioned fighting Philadelphia Phillies, best record in the National League at 32-18. That's the National League, Jess.
Yeah, I was, you know, I think things are kind of playing out exactly how I thought it would in the NL East, because the Braves got off to such a bad start. I think they're going to be sort of facing this uphill climb all year long of getting back to where they were. But reinforcements are on the way. Ronald Acuña Jr. is supposed to be getting activated. So this is the moment where we're really going to find out for sure what that team is made of, because their pitching has been pretty good. Chris Sale still looks great. We'll see there. But I think... seems like a two-horse race at this point, but, you know, it's still early.
Hell yeah, dude.
But we'll go to the American League here, because I do got to say, my pick to represent the World Series in the American League, the Seattle Mariners, are 3.5 games in front of the Houston Astros. They are 28-20. Astros are 25-24. Bringing in third, Rangers 25-26. Angels, who are on a 7-game winning streak, crazy. Brandon, are 24-25. Wow.
Ron Washington making a difference over there, dude. Yeah. And they're doing this all without Anthony Rendon. Can you freaking believe it, dude?
I know.
And Jeffy, I wanted to say this when we were talking about the freaking Rockies, but my take, dude, is that Chris Bryant is just Anthony Rendon light. Just a couple of guys. Just, they don't feel good. Just let us stay home, dude.
Yeah, let us know in the comments. Who would you rather have, Chris Bryant or Anthony Rendon? Let us know in the comments. Bringing up in last place is Brandon Bullinger's pick to win the AL West. The Las Vegas. I don't know. The Athletics are 22-29, 7.5.
They got the division right where they want them, dude.
This is the crazy part about this team, Brandon, because they should actually be kind of decent. But if not for their stupid fucking owner and John Fisher and this greedy, greedy scumbag who hoodwinked an entire fan base, sends them out to a minor league ballpark in Sacramento. Do you know what the A's, the Athletics, are on the road? They are a winning ball team. They're 14-12. Do you know what they are at home, Brandon?
What, dude? What?
8-17.
Oh, dude. That's not even at a big league park. Those didn't even count.
It's like if this team was just playing in a normal stadium, they probably would be a few games back and competing for this division. And instead, they cannot play at home because it is not a home game. They don't play at a major league ballpark. It is probably so uncomfortable for them every time they have to. They probably prefer to play on the road, to be perfectly honest. AL Central, Chicago White Sox are dog shit. They're 15-35. Kansas City Royals. I mean, this is actually a really good division. A really fun division, because there are three teams that are all 5 games back of the best team in the American League, Detroit Tigers, who are in first place, with the Guardians at 27-22, the Twins at 27-22, and the Royals at 28-23. All 5 games back. The Detroit Tigers, though, are the best team in the American League right now. And I feel pretty confident in saying that. Would you agree with that?
Best record in baseball. It is incredible. We knew they were going to be good. Didn't know they were going to be this good. Couple of ball knowers right here, especially this guy. Told you Spencer Torkelson was going to be ripping the cover off the ball. Don't ask me how I know. Just follow him on social.
Scooble, Casey Mize, Reese Olson. They just got
Zach McKinstry. That team is deep. And I got, as a diehard Dodger fan who just seethingly hates the 2017 Houston Astros, hey, shouts out to AJ Hinch. You're coaching a good ball club over there in Detroit. And I think baseball is better when Detroit is a formidable team. I don't care what the sport is, NBA, NFL, MLB. But it's been fun to watch, dude. They put out a fun product, dude.
Absolutely.
Javi Baez, dude. We didn't even mention Javi not sucking.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then the AL East.
Dude, speaking of sucking, shit.
The New York Yankees are starting to look like they might run away with this thing. They are 30-19, but they're 5 games up. They are the only team with a double-digit plus run differential. The only other team with a plus run differential in this division is the Red Sox with +8. The Yankees are 30-19. They're 5 games up on the Blue Jays, who are 25-24. The Red Sox are 25-26. They're 6 games back. The Rays are 23-26. They're 7 games back. And I didn't see this coming, I got to be honest, but the Baltimore Orioles, my God, they are 16-32 with a 3.33 winning percentage. They are 13.5 games back.
Luckily, they fired their coach, so now they're going to be good.
Yeah. I mean, this is the classic case, in my opinion, of an ownership group selling a bill of goods to a fan base. Because remember, they came in, this new ownership group comes in, buys the Orioles. They go out, they start drinking beers with fans. They're at a bar. They're like, beer's on us. They make a trade for Corbin Burns. They let everybody know, oh, we're doing things differently this time. And what's happened since they've gotten there? They let Corbin Burns walk. They let Anthony Santander walk. And then they're relying on all of their cheap rookie contracts, which just aren't ready to perform at the level they need them to. They only have Grayson Rodriguez and then this Japanese pitcher Shingano I gotta look up his name really quick. He's been pretty good, but he's their only big free agent signing here. Where are their pitching stats? Tomoyuki Sugano. You know, he's been pretty solid, but that's really it for that pitching staff. And yeah, they're just – I think that this front office kind of hoodwinked an entire fan base into believing they were going to be competitive, because this was supposed to be the next team, Brandon. Like, this was – and they've just completely fallen apart. So that was – I was not expecting that.
Man.
Yeah. Either way, that is the league update. That is league standings. We are basically out of time here, but we do have one last topic, because I always love talking about Juan Soto and dunking on him a little bit. Did you watch the Mets Yankee series and see all of that, and the Red Sox series, all the fire that was kind of thrown his way and his lack of effort?
I only got to see some of the highlights, but dude, from what I saw, some of it did seem a little damning. Like, the kid seemed a little flustered, right? Usually too cool for school. You know, there's a lot of eyes on him. He's really, really young. And I think this is the first time he's ever had to really put his stamp on something, like his own decision, because up until now, he's just been kind of floating down the river of, like, my payday. Like, this is all leading to this inevitable free market that I want to hit. And he does, and he collects a higher payday than anybody ever thought was possible, becomes the highest paid player in the sport's history. Yeah. And, you know, almost $1 billion for the kid. So I'm sorry, if I'm a Mets fan, I probably want to see all the peripherals that just, you know, the window dressing of just running plays out, smiling, being, you know, approachable by press, whatever. So I don't blame anybody for being frustrated. However, I mean, his numbers aren't bad, Jess.
Well, the numbers, excuse me, aren't what they expected them to be, because he's only hitting .246. His slugging is only .439, and he's really bad with runners in scoring position. He's hitting like .150-ish with runners in scoring position this year. So that's definitely, like, on the surface of things, frustrating if you're a Mets fan. But, like, if you actually look under the hood and see what's happening with the expected stats here, there's a lot of hard contact, and he's just hitting into some bad luck this year. Mm-hmm. His expected batting average is .310. Expected slug is .601. He's in the 96th percentile of exit velocity, 94th percentile of hard hit percentage. So seems like he's just kind of getting unlucky so far. An element of that might be that ballpark, because it is kind of a big ballpark. There are a lot of, like, big, you know, cavernous parts of the park where it's, like, deep in right field, probably a lot of balls that are dying on the warning track. Whereas in New York, there's that little league short porch in right field where a lot of home runs, you know, a lot of fly balls become home runs. And, you know, he's learning that it's just not quite the same at Citi Field. So be that as it may, I do think Juan Soto is just fine. His numbers are going to come around. You just mentioned, though, that he's a kid and that he's still pretty young. I maintain that there is no way he's 25, 26 years old. This is a 30-year-old man, by the way. Like, yeah, I do. I think Juan Soto is like three or four years older. And there's been that theory for a while. But that's just allegedly. I'm just allegedly.
Juani Pujols Soto, dude.
But the stats are one thing. Like, I think those will come around. But the hustle really is, like, egregiously bad. It's just, you can't – when you're paid that kind of money and the team is relying on you to be that guy And there are reports about you having like your own private, you know, mode of transport, you know,
yeah, the private jet thing.
Yeah. And you're just clearly not hustling to first base. You're not hustling for fly balls. I mean,
some of it is pretty silly, right? That they're like, oh, well, you know, he really wanted to stay in New York or with the Yankees, but his family made him. And it's like, no, man, they offered him an insane amount of money. There was no way he wasn't going to take it. And like, look, maybe he's just frustrated because he's frustrated with the results. And instead of just saying that, that would let, you know, maybe rival players know that, hey, this pitching is working or whatever. Maybe it's all a con and just a part of the game and it's, you know, gamesmanship. Or maybe it's just his personality. He's just not that much of a flappable guy, you know?
Yeah, but there is not a beat report. There's a beat reporter, Bob Clappish, who reported that the Mets hierarchy is reportedly concerned about his lack of enthusiasm. Mm. And this came right after that Mets-Yankee series where they had Sunday Night Baseball. They were the nationally televised game. And they wanted Juan Soto to be mic'd up on the broadcast when he was in right field, and he agreed to it. But then he changed his mind. And apparently the reporting suggests it's because he's tired about being asked about Aaron Judge and his time with the Yankees. And, you know, if I'm a Mets fan, I'm obviously happy I have him. But it does give off the impression – I'm not saying this is true, but it does give off the impression like – you're kind of making it look like you regret your decision, even though I know he doesn't. I know that that's all fake news. I know that that's not real. He wanted to go to the Mets. He always was going to go to the Mets. But it does come off that way, so I could understand the frustration if I was a Mets fan.
I feel that, man. But yeah. I don't know. It's
I think it's a nothing burger, to be honest. I'm just saying, like, I could understand why people would view it that way because you're the fucking face of the franchise now, dude. You know, that's...
You know what I think, dude? I actually don't think it's a nothing burger. I think there really are feelings like this. I really think that the Mets, like, hierarchy, whatever that means, I think there is somebody that doesn't like it, whether that's Stevie Cohen or not, or maybe it's, you know, someone in management. Maybe it's a coach. But I bet somebody's pissed off and not into it. And I bet there is a way that Soto carries himself because he is kind of a cavalier guy. Fan bases have not appreciated that. You know, now most notably the Yankees fan base for how he left. But
this was a thing in San Diego, too.
It was a big thing, you know.
Yeah, that's
what I was alluding to earlier with the whole like, oh, he's going down this river of, you know, free agency. Just kind of like... That's my point is now he's made his choice. So he's got to take ownership of it. So maybe that's part of the discomfort is that now people kind of have him pegged down for something and want to ask him about it. And he's just like, you know, hey dude, I'm done talking about it. I just want to play ball. Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's fine. If that's what you want to do, but you
Trout's
also
never been a big press guy, you know?
Yeah. But you have to hustle if you're going to be out there and get
that's fair.
I think that's just kind of like bare minimum what you do as a big leaguer. Like you got to hustle. And that's why he just wasn't a good fit with like a guy like Machado. Cause that you just kind of have two of the same exact personalities and that can sometimes clash when you're in a lock. It's like in some weird way, it's like oil and water, even though they're kind of like the same guy. If that makes any sense, I don't know. Whatever. We've been recording too long. We're done. Yeah.
One last thing, Brando. I wanted to ask you, Jess. One last thing. The Athletic released their MLB All Quarter Century team. I thought the lineup was pretty rad. I'm going to run through it real quick. Catcher, Yadier Molina. First base, Albert Pujols. Second base, Jose Altuve. Shortstop, the captain, Derek Jeter. Third base, Adrian Beltre. Left field, Barry Bonds. Center field, Mike Trout. Right field, Aaron Judge. The starting rotation is Justin Verlander, Clayton Kershaw, Roy Halladay, Max Scherzer, and Randy Johnson. You can only replace one player. Who are you switching out?
Who is the DH?
David Ortiz.
I mean, if you... I think that in like 10 years... we're going to be saying Shohei should have that spot. I mean, it's tough to take Big Poppy out, but I mean, I think Shohei Ohtani is just too special to keep off of that spot because Shohei actually plays on the field one out of every five games when he's healthy. So I think you do. I would maybe consider replacing Shohei. And I would also consider finding somebody else to replace Jose Altuve, even though it pains me to admit that he might be probably the best second baseman in the past 25 years. But, you know, who do you have? What are the other options here? Robinson Cano, Chase Utley, Dustin Pedroia,
Jeff Kent.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. I think
it might be Altuve, dude. Fuck.
There's a but you don't know how much he benefited from people cheating, even if he didn't cheat. Yeah. He claims, but he benefited from cheating, so the stats are padded. So I got to go Chase Utley, brother. I would put Chase Utley at second, but I think another slick move would be you get rid of Aaron Judge in right field and you put Shohei Ohtani in there, because as you recall, he did play right field with the Angels of Anaheim
for like 3 or 4 games. Yeah. All right, Brando.
Oh, man. Well, we're back, baby. Deferred collusion. Yeah. We got some stuff working. We'll be working together a little bit more. Got some blue-collar bullshit, but I got to get, you know, the old day job. But don't worry about that. We got more stuff cooking, dude.
We'll be back. Let us know
what you're fired up. There was a lot of great baseball this last weekend. Let us know what you're fired up for this upcoming weekend and what we should be looking forward to ahead. As always, let us know whatever we missed. Anything you like, didn't like. Hey, if you want to comment, share, subscribe, that helps us tremendously. Mm-hmm. You know, we're dedicated to getting the truth, that real, honorable journalism to you, the worthy viewer and the smart fan, of course.
Absolutely.
Oh, my gosh. This is my favorite guy, my host with the most, Jesse, James, King of Crespi Row. You know, South Robertson's own.
The demon, dude.
Mouth of his. You should see
that. Yeah, I'm not even gonna let people know what this joke is. So you guys can speculate however you want. But love you, Brando.
We'll talk to you, dude. Deferred collusion. Later.
Fuck Altuve.
Bye.